And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, money. Thought we'd talk about something that gets everybody's attention. Money. You know, one time a number of years ago, I understand a man was wanting to put an ad in a big major New York newspaper. And he was trying to figure out how to get people's attention. So he just put right in the middle of the page, three words, money and sex. And, that's all it was at the very top of the page, money and sex. Took up two thirds of the whole page. It was a whole page out of the newspaper. And then below, in smaller words, much, much smaller, the ad read, "Now that we've got your attention, we'd like to tell you about our new refrigerator." The man owned a refrigerator company. Money and sex had nothing at all to do with his refrigerator, I assumed. Although, yeah, some people do claim the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. But still, that doesn't have anything to do with money and sex. But it did get people's attention. People were talking about that ad for months, maybe years to come. And their eyes were just driven to that ad. They wanted to know what the headline, Money and Sex, was all about. I want to talk today about money. The Bible has a lot to say about money. And it really should get your attention. Not like that refrigerator ad, maybe, but it should get our attention. Jesus had a lot, so much to say. Jesus, as you know, had no mansion, no servants. In fact, he said foxes have holes, but the Son of Man, you know, that is Jesus Christ, doesn't even have a place to lay his head. Think about that. Jesus said that it's very difficult, very hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven, which really confounded his disciples because the Jews taught that the rich would be the first to get into heaven. They were so blessed by God. They agree with today's, you know, word of faith movement, the prosperity preachers. The more you have, the more God must love you, or the more you're chosen by God. And that's why you're rich. The poor, not so much. A lot of people preach that even in Christian churches today. Very sad that they do, because the whole history of the Bible is a testimony against exactly that satanic philosophy. The Bible has so much to say about money. And you know, it criticizes the rich. James, the brother of Jesus, had some things to say too. You probably have read those. If you haven't, let's go over them in the book of James. Let's see, that would be chapter 4 is a great one. Let's go to chapter 5, though. Listen to what James, brother Jesus, had to say. He says, "Go to now, ye rich men." That old King James language, that means listen up. Listen. Listen, you rich men. "Weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. Ye have heaped treasure together for the last days." Listen up, rich men. Weep and howl for the miseries that shall come upon you. Then verse 4 says, "Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth. And the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord." Cheat somebody? defraud them? You think that the Lord doesn't know, doesn't see, will not recompense? Oh, you've got another thing coming, my friend. Verse 5 says, ye have lived in pleasure on the earth and been wanton. Ye have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter. Ye have condemned and killed the just, and he doth not resist you. Does that remind you of a lot of things that you see in the newspapers around the world where the very, very rich defraud people, cheat them, rob them, have no remorse, and usually they get off, if they're caught at all, with a slap on the wrist. And they laugh. And then they go on to their next fraudulent scheme or manipulation. And when the people cry out too much and try to point fingers and say, this company, this man, this rich person cheated me, they themselves find themselves the victims of the cheaters. Ye have condemned and killed the just, and he doth not resist you. But dear friends, God knows, God sees. And we shall find out where it all ends. Well, there was a movie some years ago, and I saw the movie. It was entitled Wall Street. Wall Street. That's the full name of it, Wall Street. In the movie was a character named Garden Gecko. Garden Gecko, sort of like the gecko lizard. Oh, this man was a lizard indeed. A lizard indeed. You know, the gecko lizard is very, well, they're very prominent all throughout Asia. I should know, having gone to Vietnam and to Thailand back in my days in the U.S. Air Force. I remember laying on my bed, I guess you could call it a bed, a cot, whatever, my cot, and looking up, and on the ceiling would be a gecko lizard, you know, lizard, and he was maybe 6 inches. I guess they could get quite large, but most of them were about, oh, I don't know, 5 to 10 inches or something like that. But I'd see him on the ceiling running back and forth. You know, almost every day you couldn't get away from the gecko. I never knew how they quite got in. Of course, we just had screened in enclosures. We didn't have windows and things like that. But how he could attach himself to the ceiling, which was just plywood, you know, old raw plywood up there, squares of it, and hold on and run back and forth, upside down, you might say. Very weird, wasn't it? And of course, those who were a little bit more skittish than I was were always afraid the gecko lizard would fall down on them. Now, I never knew a gecko lizard to bite or anything like that. They might. I've never heard of it. I never was bitten by one. Nobody that I ever knew of were bitten by a gecko lizard. They have those little gecko lizard like creatures on these Geico commercials, don't they? One that said, isn't he cute? Well, you know how women are. A little lizard being cute. You know, having seen so many of them back in my days in the fighting of the Vietnam War, they don't look so cute to me, but I had to live with them. She didn't. She just sees them on TV. In this movie, Wall Street, it's sort of a classic movie. Actor Michael Douglas, who is a Jew, by the way, played a great role as Gordon Gecko. He was what Governor Rick Perry of Texas would call a vulture capitalist. And he gave a little speech one time to shareholders. And I remember the words of it, and I think they sort of became cinematic, what would you call it, legend? Yeah, legendary words. Greed is good, he said. It's good to be greedy. I go back to many things I've read in my life. You know, Ayn Rand, she always said that's good to be greedy, good to be selfish. A lot of people have bought into that lie. I remember when I was a young man reading a book that was a big bestseller called The Art of Selfishness. Then there was another one called Looking Out for Number One. Greed, selfishness. The Bible, of course, is far different from this. It tells us to be unselfish. It says to love our neighbors as we do ourselves, and love God most of all. And by no means are we to desire, you know, treasure here on earth in the here and now. We offer a video here in the ministry, a DVD or VHS, take your pick, entitled The Blind and the Dead. It exposes false teachers, you know, in the Christian world, one of whom is Benny Hinn, who is heard on Trinity Broadcasting Network telling the president of that network, Paul Crouch. He said, "Paul, we've always been told as Christians we'll receive our treasures in heaven, store up treasures in heaven. Well, I can't use them in heaven," he said. "I can use them here on earth. I want my treasures right here on earth right now." Well, Jesus is the one who said, "Store up for yourself not treasures here on earth, but treasures in heaven." And there Benny Hinn was saying, "I don't care what Jesus said. I don't want treasures in heaven. I can't use them up there. I want them right now here on earth." That's the attitude of, you know, the false teachers. It's also the attitude of the Jewish religion, Judaism, which we'll get to in just a minute. Because greed is good is the credo, the very dogma of the Jews and their religion. So Garden Gecko was Jewish actor Michael Douglas. Now, co-star in that movie was Charlie Sheen. Oh, good old Charlie. Did a pretty good role playing sort of the right-hand man to Garden Gecko, the vulture capitalist. Now, both of them ended up in prison by the end of the movie. They were both, you know, convicted of their criminal acts. But that doesn't often happen, and there are very few of these crooks who get sent to prison. Look at Bernie Madoff. Now, he's in prison. He's known as the greatest Ponzi scheme artist or con artist of all time. He ripped off thousands of investors to the tune of over $65 billion. Was Bernie Madoff especially smart? Was he an IQ genius? Not really. His scheme was actually quite transparent. And they say that even a third-rate auditor at the Securities and Exchange Commission could have recognized the huge potholes in Madoff's accounts. But they never did. Why is that? Well, I believe it was because Bernie Madoff was a Jew. A well-known and influential Jew. He served as president of the American Jewish Congress. Couldn't get any more higher up on the Jewish hierarchy than that. Madoff put all of his stolen billions in banks run by Jews, and according to sources, much of it was wired to the Israel Discount Bank in Tel Aviv. I think they still have most of it there. You know, Israel was created as a safe haven for financial manipulators and crooks. It really was. Got a lot of accounts there they keep secret. Our IRS can't get in those Israeli banks. So Bernie Madoff, a Jew, was helped along in his graft by his tribal friends, fellow Jews. Should we, or may we say that the theft of $65 billion was sort of a Jewish thing? Maybe so. It's the Jews, stupid, James Carville might say, except he's too afraid, fear of the Jews, to say such a thing. In 2007 and 2008, when the financial collapse of America began, it was Jewish firms, Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns, that failed first. And then we had the AIG, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, you name it. Jews ran all these organizations, all these banking institutions. And, you know, Wall Street is made up of Jews. It's a Jewish preserve, a Jewish club. They may as well take a sign put up on the massive front doors of the New York Stock Exchange in New York. "Attention," it would read. "No Gentiles or dogs allowed. This is an exclusively Jewish club." But after all, the Jews claim they work for God. Lloyd Blankfein, CEO and chief officer of the gigantic Goldman Sachs Bank. Now, that's a big Jewish-run bank, owned mostly by the Rothschilds, but Blankfein is the CEO, the top guy there, at least, you know, running it for the on a daily basis for the Rothschilds. When asked about his job, he said, "I work for God. I work for God." That's what Lloyd Blankfein said. And it made me, dear friends, at the time, I was working on a book called Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. Now, I published that book, and we'll offer it through the ministry here in just a little while. Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. But I wanted to know who was his God. He works for God. That's what he does as CEO of one of the world's most powerful banks. If he works for God, who is that God? It could not be Jesus, because Jesus said it's very hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Isn't that something? He said, store for yourself treasures in heaven, not here on earth. And his own earthly brother, James, warned the rich of what was to come. The miseries. They would be howling in their miseries. Obviously, Mr. Blankfein has a different God than we Christians do. But are we Christians not changing? Will we soon have the same God as do the Jews? And who is this God that they worship? I think it's only right to ask that question. Now, I want to admit something to you. I want to admit it. Let's get it out of the way. Jews have been rewarded by their God. Yes, they have. Jews, and I did some studies here, make up only about 2-3% of the total U.S. population, but almost half of the top 40 richest Americans are Jews. In fact, in Forbes magazine, they listed the 400 richest Americans, and about half of them were Jews. 3% maximum of the population, but about half of them are among the 400 richest, according to Forbes Business magazine. 1/3 of all the multimillionaires in America are Jews. The percentage of Jewish households with income greater than $50,000 is twice that of non-Jews. You get that? Jews have, there are twice as many Jews with that level of income. 40% of the partners in leading law firms in Washington, D.C. and New York are Jews. 20% of the professors at America's leading universities are Jews. And although they're less than 3% of the population, over 30% of the students at prestigious Ivy League schools like Harvard, Yale, Princeton are Jews. They get the best assignments at the top universities. And if we go into the business world, oh my goodness gracious. As I said, those holding a chair on the New York Stock Exchange are almost exclusively Jews. Those who own large segments of the U.S. economy, from liquor and beverages to entertainment and manufacturing, computers, internet industries, virtually 100% Jews. Companies like Yahoo, Dell, Facebook, Google, Apple, Microsoft, all owned by Jews. How did they do this? Is their God rewarding them? Obviously he is. They have their reward right here on earth, don't they? Well, why is this? I want to talk about that. Yes, they have a God. And he has a doctrine, a cardinal doctrine. His chief doctrine is greed is good. That's the doctrine of the God of the Jews. And it is by that doctrine that they operate their lives. It's the most important thing to them, money. Money. Reading a book by a man named Silberger, S-I-L-B-E-R-G-E-R, recently, called The Jewish Phenomenon, 7 Keys to Why the Jews Are So Rich. I wanted to know what he thought. He's Jewish, of course. Well, there are a lot of things he said about Jews. They're smarter in business. They're so intelligent. They're great bargainers, all these things. But none of them held any water for me. You see, I've done a lot of research on intelligence. And let me tell you a little bit about that, for example. There's a recent book published by Dr. Richard Lynn, professor from the University of Ulster in Ireland, and Dr. Tatu Vanhane, professor of political science at University in Finland. The book, entitled IQ and the Wealth of Nations, was published in 2002, and what it does is compare the IQ of people in different countries. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Who's the smartest? People in South Korea? Red China? The United States? Germany? Spain? Mongolia? Israel? Remember now, Israel is the Jewish state. If they're the smartest people in the world, if that's why, maybe that's why they're so rich. What does this book say? Well, guess what? Turns out of 82 nations studied, the Jews ranked 34th. 34th out of 82 nations. The average IQ of the Jew in Israel is 94. They scored 94 on average. Now, Hong Kong's average IQ was much higher at 107. South Korea, 106. Japan, 105. Red China, 100. Poland, 99. Spain, 99. Mongolia, 98. And the United States score, also 98. Now, the United States score included all the peoples we've got in this nation. Not just the white people, but blacks, Hispanics, Asians, everybody in America. We're a melting pot. But altogether, we averaged out about 98. Same as Mongolia. Now, I know some people that are prejudiced say, I don't believe that. You mean the Mongolians are as smart as Americans? Yeah, that's right. But get this. The Mongolians are smarter than the Jews in Israel. The Spanish of Spain are smarter. The Poles of Poland are smarter. The Koreans, yes, they rank above the Jews too. So where did all this come about that they're the most brilliant in the world? Well, you know, they get a lot of publicity. They make the publicity. They own the newspapers and the magazines and the movies. Now, I've seen a lot of movies about Einstein. Oh, he was the greatest genius in the world. Or was he? Well, he was Jewish. That's why he gets such great publicity. Such great PR. But what about Thomas Edison? He invented the light bulb. He invented motion picture industry with movie cameras. On and on we go with all of his inventions. But isn't it strange nobody talks about Thomas Edison being so brainy? But he was. There was Morse, you know, that gave us the Morse code. There was Mr. Bell that gave us the telephone. But see, they're not Jews, so they're not mentioned very much, are they? Must only be a Jew that can be intelligent. But it turns out that Einstein stole the theory of relativity, his greatest idea, from someone else. Now, I'm not going to talk about that today, but isn't that strange? It's just about confirmed that he did steal the idea. You see, he was a patent clerk in a little country in Europe. And he got a report in. Somebody wanted to patent an idea. And Einstein just stole it. They said Einstein actually was a pretty stupid man. I guess that's why he didn't figure out that it took a comb to make your hair look good. He never combed his hair. They say he used to ride a bicycle everywhere. Well, he probably couldn't figure out how to drive a car. In fact, somebody, there's a story in a magazine one time of how they came upon Einstein very confused as to how to put 15 cents, that's all a Coke cost back in those days, a dime and a nickel into a Coke machine. Couldn't figure out how to operate a Coke machine, which actually, as I recall it, used to be a little tough. Used to be handle on it and all kind of things. Kids nowadays don't realize that. Used to be a little bit tough to figure out. Even took me 30 seconds sometimes to figure out how to operate a Coke machine. I'm not that smart. But somebody came up and said, well, Mr. Einstein, here, let me help you. I'll get you a Coke out of the machine. But he was Jewish. He must be smart. He must be the smartest man in the world. Well, studies show Mongolians are smarter than Jews. And you know, Mongolians don't have nearly as much money as Jews. How did that happen? What's the mechanics of that? Well, in his book, The Jewish Phenomenon, Silberger says that the Jews are spiritually driven. Well, he doesn't say spiritual. He says psychologically driven. But I think it's spiritual. They have a spiritual imperative that drives them to be superior. They want to be superior. So they create this phenomenon. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But the fact is that Jews worship money. It's their God. Now, where did you come up with that text, Mars? Isn't that an anti-Semitic statement? Well, a Jew came up with it, Heinrich Heine, one of the greatest 19th century philosophers from over in Europe. He wrote this. He said, money is the God of the Jews, and Rothschild is his prophet. He must have known. Money is the God of the Jews, and Rothschild is his prophet. The false prophet, I guess you'd say. Money is the God of the Jews. Can someone have money as their God? Well, it seems that the Talmud that contains the 613 laws of the Jews, which the rabbis hold to be greater, the Talmud, actually it's literally it's called the Babylonian Talmud. They got it when they were in captivity in Babylon, or at least formed it up. Later it was put into writing. But the Babylonian Talmud, which has all these laws about the Jews, seems to specialize on two things, sex and money. Maybe the head of the refrigerator company that bought that ad was a Jew. Sex and money, he titled it. Money. Let's go over this a little bit. Listen to the emphasis on money in the Jewish Talmud. In Choshen Ham 388:15. So I want to give you the actual source from the Talmud itself, the most holy book. That the rabbis say that the Talmud is greater than the Old Testament. So this is the greatest holy book in the Judaic religion, another Judaism. They say this, let me quote it. If it can be proven that someone has given the money of Israelites to the Goyim, that's to Gentiles, a way must be found to wipe him off the face of the earth. Wow. Here's another one from Choshen Hamaspot 4:25-50. A Jew may rob a Gentile, but a Gentile may not rob a Jew. Another one from Shulchan, Choshen Hamaspot 1:48 in the Talmud. A Jew may rob a Gentile, he may cheat him. They can rob Gentiles, they can cheat them. Interesting, isn't it? It's okay. It's even encouraged to rob and cheat Gentiles. What other holy book has such things in it than the Talmud? I'll be right back. We're asking the question, who is the God of the Jews? And why is it that their credo, their doctrine is greed is good? Text Mars back again. Have you got my newest book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star? Eye-opening revelations and forbidden knowledge about Israel, the Jews, Judaism, Zionism, and the Rothschilds. all in one book. Never has there been a book like this, ever. And hundreds and hundreds of facts, names. You'll learn what the Jewish religion really is. A lot of people think they know. I ask pastor friends and they say, oh, it's the religion of the Old Testament. And I say, no, it's not. Guess again. Well, they're confounded. They stumble over everything. They don't know. They're not taught about other religions in seminary. Well, that's been my job here, to expose all of these false religions. I started many years ago when I did a book called Tex Mar's Book of New Age Cults and Religions. I didn't have Judaism in that book or Islam. I wish I had put them in it, because Judaism really is the fount of all the New Age false religions and cults. But, well, I've mended my error, you might say, by exposing the religion of Judaism in this book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. You'll find out it's the religion of the serpent. How dare Tex Mar say such a thing? Well, I don't say that. I'm just quoting the rabbis and what they say. This book has everything you'd want to know, all about the religion of the Jews, about the Jewish Kabbalah, the Jewish Talmud. And yes, we'll talk about greed, money, and the Jews. We'll talk about many American presidents and their relationship to the Jews. Harry Truman, how he was bribed by the Jews to recognize Israel as a state. Then there's the Illuminati's Rothschild dynasty. Got an entire section of that. The truth about Red China, how the Jews control the Red Chinese government. Incredible thing. Did you know that a New York rabbi sits on the throne of Babylon in Iraq? That's in this book. About Masonic Jews, Masonic, of the Masonic Lodge, plotting to control the world. The plan for Jerusalem to be the world capital. Do you know of the 21 ways the Illuminati are smashing Americans' resistance to the globalist agenda? Did you know that the Bible says that Jerusalem is the most wicked city on earth? That it is the very cauldron of Abaddon? And Apollyon. So much here. Barack Obama. Is he in hock to the Jews? How about others? George W. Bush. Newt Gingrich. John Kerry. John McCain. On and on and on. Now, I'd like you to have this book. An amazing book. Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. And for just $25, we'll send you this book. It's about the size of three regular books. It's a big encyclopedic type reference book. For $25, we'll send it to you. Please add $5 shipping and handling. Send $30 then total to Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. You can also phone us toll free during the work week, Monday through Friday. Toll free, 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673. By the way, that really is 1-800-234-WORD, W-O-R-D, W-O-R-D. If you're overseas, or you can't get that number, call us at area code 512-263-9780. Then, of course, you can go to our website, powerofprophecy.com. In fact, I encourage you, I really invite you to come to our website. It's free, of course. Many videos, articles, all the descriptions of my books and CDs, audio tapes. You can even listen to this radio program. If you're not listening to it right now on streaming audio, you can do so with crystal clarity. Of course, we're also heard on WINB, shortwave radio, WWCR, the American Voice Network, and a few other places. You can hear this show. And by the way, I want to encourage you also to listen in 24/7 to BibleHomeChurch.org. And I give completely most of the time, completely different messages there at BibleHomeChurch.org. A lot of folks have started a home church, and they get together and they just get their computer out and they listen to streaming audio, BibleHomeChurch.org. And a lot of people have joined us, become members. We sort of call them members at large of the Bible Home Church congregation. And we'd like to invite you to become a member. So when people say, well, what church are you a member of? Bible Home Church. It's an internet church. All right? We'd love for you to become a member of our church, Bible Home Church. Now, keep in mind that we are old-time gospel people, and we believe in the ancient landmarks of the faith. And I know it's not popular, but I still believe that Jesus is Lord. The Bible is without error. You know, all those things the world at large says, oh, that can't be. Well, that's the way it is. And that's the message that you get. But a lot of people do like that because it's true. And people are ready for something that's true. That's all that they ask of me. Text, just tell us the truth. Well, that's easy to do. Just stick with the Bible. Stick with the words of Jesus Christ. Stick to the truth in all respects. You'll feel better. You'll get along better. And you'll just enjoy life. I do. I'm contented. And I've had the hounds of hell come up against me. All my goodness gracious. Everybody from the FBI to the IRS to whoever. But I love them all. And I've always invited them in for a cup of coffee, even though when I had to grit my teeth a little bit, you know, I did so. Some of them were sort of nice. Some of the people that hate us turn out to be some of them turn out to be our friends. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that disgusting? Well, maybe so. Somebody wrote to me, Jerry, this weekend. Jerry Barrett is our broadcast engineer here in the studio in the ministry. And he said, well, are you going to apologize now? Pastor Tex, you know, your website, powerofprophecy.com, links up with some guy, you know, and he was just, you know, accused of some sexual perversion, molesting kids or something. And you have linked up your website to his. Well, actually, I don't do that. You know, our webmaster links up our sites. But we've linked up other bad places too, like the New York Times. And, you know, the Washington Post, I mean, no telling who we've linked up to. But a link simply means you have a way for other people to get to their website or whatever. That the particular one that they were talking about, I'd never even heard of the guy before. So I was more than happy to take the link off our website, you know. he did sound like, you know, he was a bad guy. But there again, we're not connected, not affiliated with anybody. And there are many who are no longer on my radio program when I found out something about. Believe me, if a guy is a child molester or, I don't know, whatever they are, you know, they are, the criminals are out there. When I hear about them, wonk, they'll never be a guest on this program ever, ever, ever. Well, but you know, there's so many out there. Goodness gracious alive. Spend most of your time trying to screen other people. I can only vouch for the people that work at this ministry in Tex Mars. And my wife can vouch for me. And when I do bad things, she'll probably want to kill me. So I keep pretty straight. No, it's not true. She wouldn't kill me. She'd probably cry. That's why I don't do it. I don't want to see one to cry. Yeah, break her heart. Wouldn't do that. Don't want to break God's heart either. And I don't want to break your heart, dear friend. You mean a lot to me. I think that would really kill me if somebody wrote to me and said, Tex, I understand you're guilty of ABC, whatever it is. And if it were true, boy, I count it very, very high on the order of things in life to be true, to be true. To tell the truth and to be a true person, you know. If I think being drunk is bad, then I shouldn't go out and get drunk. If I believe that sex out of marriage is bad, then I shouldn't be philandering on my wife. Those are my standards, you know. And it doesn't take that much. People say, boy, you must live a perfect life. Don't live a perfect life. It doesn't take that much to stay out of somebody else's bed, to not embezzle money, to not harm little children. It doesn't take much at all. Not when I see little kids. I think, well, who could possibly do that? Who could harm a little kid? Makes me want to get in a room with them, you know, for about, give me 5 minutes with these monsters. Well, Wanda says, Tex, you're not that cruel. Yes, I am. Somebody molest kids? Yes, I'm cruel. Let me at them. They won't do it anymore. And the taxpayers won't have to pay any more money out either for them to be in prison. I'll take care of them. I'm just a mean old man. But maybe there are a few listening to me, Jerry, out there just as mean as me. They're not going to take it either. Kids being hurt. I didn't need to get on with this program, but there's one thing that really bothers me. I was watching a program, though. There's this Nancy Grace. And it was about a little 14 or 15-year-old girl that's missing. And, you know, when that happens, they say a 14 or 15-year-old girl is missing. She's still missing. She's believed to be dead. Her mother was living with a guy. And he's being suspected of maybe raped and killed a girl. Nobody knows. Let me tell you something. If you're a mother and you're living with a man who is not the father of your children, and you bring him in to live with you in your home, you should be in prison. You are a reprobate and a criminal. If you want to marry the man, marry him. If he's good enough to marry, but he probably is a bum or he wouldn't be living, then you must be a bum-ess. Is there such a word as bum-ess? I don't know. It sounds good, Jerry. You must be a bum-ess for taking a guy in like that. And then you go to work and he stays at home and molests your kids or abuses them physically, beats them or whatever. What kind of mother are you? And I don't know. There used to be laws contributing to the delinquency of children, all that. And these mothers even go to bed with these guys. They're not even married to. And then they do bad things to the kids. Many of them don't even have jobs. They're just gigolos living with the mother. I tell you, it makes me sick. The United States didn't put up with that when I was a kid. They didn't, that's beyond the measure of beyond improprieties. Don't, if you're a grandmother and you have a daughter that's living with a man and not married to him, okay, and you have children there, children now, they just want to mess up their life. That's their problem. But they bring, if they let this person, man or woman, really live with their children, that's wrong. That is wrong. You should do something as a grandparent. Go down and file criminal charges against him. That's what needs to be happening. Okay. Enough pontificating today. It's a big word. Pontificating today. Preaching is what they used to call it, you know? Okay. And by the way, folks, if you don't agree with me on that, write to me. If you think it's okay for a young mother to take a guy in that, and this one, the one they were showing on screen, he had this t-shirt on with skeletons and a big snake wrapped around him. That was the image on his t-shirt. And he had tattoos all over him, and he had a beard and a mustache, and there he was hanging on, in long hair, hanging on to this little girl. And I thought, yeah, you bum, you monster, you criminal. But then the mother, she was saying, I wish I could get my little girl back. Yeah, sure. You should never put him up with that guy. Well, we're talking about the God of the Jews. The God of the Jews and his doctrine, which is greed is good. Well, you know, I usually don't quote Karl Marx, the founder of communism, on this program, but I'm going to quote him today because he was Jewish. And by the way, he was not an atheist by any means. He actually set up a little altar to his God in his home. It had black candles on it. And he wore the phylacteries on his forehead, you know, the way the Jewish rabbis wear them. Karl Marx was Jewish, of course. He came from a long line of rabbis. And he wrote the books that inspired Vladimir Lenin and Trotsky, Mao Zedong, and so many other communist monsters. But Karl Marx had something to say about Jews. It was his tribe, his race, his people, and he had a lot to say about Jews and money, believe it or not. In fact, he wrote an entire, it's really not a book, it's a little booklet, I've got a copy of it, entitled On the Jewish Question, 1844. Maybe I ought to republish that, Jerry. Except, I know my critics out there would say, Tex Morris publishes books by Marxists. Well, this is an interesting book. Shows the mindset of Karl Marx. Listen to what he says about the Jews and their religion. He says, what is the worldly religion of the Jews? Huckstering. What is his world god? Money. Remember Heinrich Heine, the German philosopher, said that money is the god of the Jews. And now we have Karl Marx saying the god of the Jews is money. Interesting, isn't it? Well, what did he mean by that? What did he mean to say that their god is money? Well, he goes on in his paper on the Jewish question, Karl Marx does, to elaborate. He says the Jews, unlike many Gentiles, are emancipated. Now, to be emancipated means to be made free. They're free. They're free, he said, of nations, for example. Now, why is that? Because, he says, in whatever nation the Jew lives, he is not tied to that nation. He is not really a citizen of that nation. He's got his own people, his own nation, and they really have no, you know, government that you can at least quickly identify. The Jew has already emancipated himself, but in a Jewish way. Now remember, Karl Marx was saying that his goal is to emancipate, give freedom to the whole world. He was going to take the shackles, the chains off the workers and unite the world. Well, but he says the Jews are already emancipated. How? He says through money. They control the money. Isn't that interesting? Wherever they live, within each country where they live, the Jew is a social, cultural, and spiritual being. Separated from the Gentile society. Emancipated then. Free of these poisonous thoughts of nationalism. The Jew doesn't think about constitutions, about founding fathers like Washington and Jefferson and so forth. He's free of such thoughts. He thinks only of money. And through money, he has gained great power in the world. The Jew in Vienna may only be tolerated by the people, but he determines the fate of the whole empire, says Marx. The Jew may not have any rights in even the smallest German state, but he can decide the fate of Europe with his money. That's interesting, isn't it? The Jews' money gives them freedom to do whatever they want then. After all, in the satanic religion, Anton LaVey said, and so did Aleister Crowley, the great British Satanist, do as thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. You're not tied to any country. You don't have to obey its laws. You can cheat, rob, steal, murder, whatever you can get away with. It's in your holy book, the Talmud. Get more money. Mark Twain said that. Did you know that Mark Twain wrote a little bit about the Jews, wrote a whole essay about the Jews? He says the Jews are the world's best money getters. And that has made a lot of people angry. They're able to get money. It's like they're mesmerized by and magnetically drawn to money. And I was thinking about that, dear friends. When Jesus went to the Jews, preaching to them, he told them that they could not serve two gods. You must choose between God and mammon. Mammon means money. And I mentioned this on the air before. Isn't it interesting? Jesus didn't say you've got to choose between me or even the Father and some other God, or even between God and Satan. He didn't say you've got to choose either Satan or God. He said you've got to choose which you will serve, God or money. He must have known the Jewish mind and heart. He knew what was most uppermost in their minds, which is greed is good. Money. Money is our God. Now in the Jewish Talmud, they can make up all these stories about the God they serve. In the Kabbalah, they serve many, 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 many gods and goddesses. They really do. The Jews do. They claim that the Lord my God, the Shemaiah says, the Lord my God is only one God. But in fact, they have a lot of gods in Judaism. But the more gods you have, the less God you have. Think about that one. In the Hindu religion, they got millions of gods and goddesses. Precious Hindu lady called me one time on a radio show just to let me know that I needed to be corrected. It is true, she said, we have millions of gods and goddesses in the Hindu religion, but after all, they're all just different names for the same God. And I says, well, what is his name? Well, it's all the same God. I said, well, what is his name? That God must have a name. She says, well, it's millions of gods and goddesses. I said, so he doesn't have a name. Well, no. I said, well, yes, it's Lucifer. There's only one real God on this earth. The rest of them are all stand-ins, substitutes, imposters led by Satan. Make up your own gods. Have a smorgasbord of gods. The Jews do that. And sometimes they even say, we have just one God. And you Christians have three, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. But actually, they have many more than three gods in the Jewish religion. And you'll find that out when you read my book, Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. But it's interesting to me that Jesus said, you'll either worship God or money. So he told the Jews. Well, you know what they said? Okay, we'll take money. Crucify him. That's what they said. That's what they did. Crucify him. Well, okay. That's what they've got. And over the years, well, they've got money as their God. And you know, it's funny that the Jews even name themselves after money items. Think of it, Copperfield, Silverstein, Goldberg, Goldman, Diamond. They're all Jewish names. You know, I call them the precious metal names, and then there's the the gems names. Have you noticed that most jewelers are Jewish? Yeah, they are. Helzberg and all the jewelers are mostly Jewish. They go over to Africa and get all the blood diamonds and bring them back and so forth. The diamond trade is huge inside of Israel. And of course, Oppenheimer was a Jewish man who cornered the market on diamonds inside the largest diamond producing country in the world, South Africa. And Oppenheimer still has, you know, the corner on the diamond market. They only produce so many diamonds per year of such and such a quality so they can keep the price up. That's what all companies do, of course, with the oil around the world. Only produce so much. And then they keep telling you, we're going to run out, we're going to run out, and they're always lying. They'll never run out. But that way they can keep the price of oil up. Well, listen to what Mark says about money. Remember now, I've already quoted Marx as saying that the worldly religion of the Jew is huckstering. He's a huckster. And that his world God is money. Here's what he says. Quote, this is no isolated fact. The Jew has emancipated himself, that's freed himself, in a Jewish manner. not only because through him money has become a world power and the practical Jewish spirit has become the practical spirit of the Christian nations. Get that? The power of the Jew comes from his money. And money is not a national power, but a world power. Folks, dollars are useful anywhere in this world. Go to Mexico, go to Qatar, go to South Africa that I just mentioned. Go to Uganda. Go to West Germany, well now Germany. They'll take your dollars. Go to Moscow in Russia, they'll take your dollars. Money is a world power. And the practical Jewish spirit, unfortunately, is based on money. And it has now become the practical spirit of the Christian nations. And here's what Marx ends up saying. He says, the Jews have emancipated themselves insofar as the Christians have become Jews. Let me explain this to you. The Jews go into a nation and they slowly acquire and accumulate all the money of that nation through cheating, through robbing, through favoring their own tribal people. They stay separate, and finally they have all this money and power, and they have their people in the top positions. In America, it's Wall Street, it's Hollywood, it's New York City that runs all the publishing and so forth. So they control people's minds through the television networks and through Hollywood, even children through the cartoons, adults through the internet, et cetera, et cetera. And they themselves are free to sin and to do evil in all the ways that they wish because they have the money to do it. And that's all they can think is to get more and more money. As Mark Twain said, they're good money getters. And then they become, you might say, missionaries for their cause. They're evangelistic. They teach all the Christians in our country. Money is good. Greed is good. Greed is good. And Christians believe it. Millions of Christians. And therefore, we would elect a man named Barack Obama who says, I'll give you things. I'll give you free things. I'll take money that I don't have from other people that I steal it from, and I'll give it to you. And millions say, yes, give me free things. I want freebies. I want things. I want stuff. Give me stuff. Barack Obama gives them stuff. They're happy. They vote for him. But how about the millions who did not vote for Obama? Well, they're the same way. They want money. They want more and more money. The Jews have emancipated themselves to the extent that they've made the Christians into their soul captives. Christians depart. There's been a great falling away from Christianity and toward Judaism. Christians are becoming Jews but don't even know it. Why? They have taken upon themselves the Jewish spirit. Their God is money, just as the Jews' God is. And the chief doctrine of most people who call themselves Christians today, regrettably, is greed is good. I'm Tex Mars. You've been listening to Power of Prophecy. We've been looking at greed is good, with some insights, perhaps, on the God of money, the God of the Jews, and, unfortunately, of many Christians today. Each week during the same time, won't you tune in? Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.